Well, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. And today is, by the way, July 17th, 2022. And I've been Robert Winters my whole life. And meanwhile, over here in the other corner, we have
Patrick Warren Barrett III.
You're a third. Eh?
I'm a third. I can say Esquire too, but no real attorney says that.
Actually, it's funny, you know, no real attorney says Esquire, and no self-respecting PhD like me ever calls themselves doctor.
Doctor.
No. I'm just still Robert, you know. But, you know, it's usually the insecure people are the ones who insist on the title. So anyway, we're talking. Yeah.
Let's wrap up some Buto.
Yeah, so let's wrap up some Buto in a beautiful bow here.
Love it.
All right. Okay. So and that is, unless the ordinance committee meeting gets canceled, I don't know if it will or won't. But there's one coming up on the 26th or 27th. I think they're back to back linkage.
So there's a hearing on the 26th at 1 p.m. for the Buto discussion, which is a no public comment allowed event. It's kind of a continuance of the last ordinance hearing. I'm not sure that it's going to take place. I'm not sure if they have all the counselors for that. The incentive zoning hearing is on the 27th at 5 p.m. in the Sullivan Chamber. See you there. Last we left off, we were in Ithaca and we were talking to Mom. And the only thing I want to say about that and wrap it up with Mom is that,
And by the way, the reason why Ithaca is significant here is, at least from my understanding, is at least one of our city councilors, I believe Ms. Nolan, has basically used Ithaca as sort of the model on which we should base our Cambridge approach, which to me is kind of ridiculous because they're really not comparable.
But well, the Ithaca piece too, I mean, and Mom's out front ran with us too. They posted something on Twitter, an article about the Ithaca program. I just want to highlight the differences. If you're a Cambridge condominium owner of a building that's got 50 units or more, you can expect your assessment through the current system to be about 100 to 200 bucks a month. You know, if you're a commercial property owner, 25,000 square feet being the baseline, you know, we can expect somewhere around $40,000 to $50,000 a year once these fees start kicking in. The difference between that program and Ithaca is Ithaca has no "we're going to tax you until you die" program. They have a voluntary program, which absolutely a voluntary program. Let's do it right now. I'll start upgrading. They also have seed money up to $100 million for low interest loans to help people, because the cost of doing this, even in a new building, as you've seen, Robert, you know, can have either extreme impacts on the design of a building as you in new construction or an existing buildings. Imagine being in a 50 unit building where everyone has an individual forced hot air heating system. You can't just jump in there and plug in heat pumps and call it a day. You have to upgrade the electrical. You have to probably introduce transformers. You may have to introduce switchgear. You're going to have to find an outside demising wall to hang that condenser on. I'm just saying, it's comical to think of a large residential building that's just beset by condensers hanging off the side of it. But
Patrick, this requires people to actually think about building construction. Well, don't you think that's unfair?
It truly is. And as Quentin Zondervan is fond of saying, it's not his job through legislation to think about those things. That's everybody else's problem. You know, it's a very wonderful thing to be able to draft in a vacuum. If I can solve all of the world's problems individually without thinking about the consequences to anything else, I could get that done in probably a half an hour. The issue is, you know, for existing buildings especially, and that's why I kind of look at this right now. There's new buildings, I can figure that out to some degree. But for existing buildings, each one is a individualized snowflake of problems. Each one has its own issues, its own sort of problems and things that we need to look at. Honestly, I'd go building to building and give an assessment to figure out the path on how to get them. Not in 2035, because that's not possible. 2050 to get them upgraded.
Now, let me, this is just a side question. Mm-hmm. Is Buto a is this a zoning issue or a municipal ordinance,
Matt? Municipal ordinance.
All right, so it's a municipal ordinance, because I know that, you know, there's a concept that's pretty much almost universal with zoning, which is that it's primarily about new construction. Yes. All right. So this is the template for new construction.
Yes.
Whereas if you have an older building, it is, quote, grandfathered in.
Right.
Until such time as you do some major thing, in which case maybe or maybe not, you have to conform to new zoning, the current zoning.
That's not how this ordinance will work.
So in a nutshell is why I have a real problem with this proposal, is the way it basically retroactively goes back and says, it doesn't give you just incentives to do right with your old building. Mm-hmm. It basically tries to impose a brand new standard on an old building, which mandates that you do something which is actually potentially big, heavy lift.
I have to feel like CDD and the council knows this is problematic. Why else would they have been sort of tucked in a room since last November discussing this almost in private and not alerting any of the people who are affected by it? You know, CDD, Iran Farouk emailed me and said that she had individually notified every Buto owner. Well, I've talked to a bunch of them, none of them have heard of it, which is why I sent out those letters today. All I want people to do, if 4,200 people show up tomorrow and say, you know what, this is awesome, we love it, let's do it, great. But it still doesn't eliminate the practical fact that we won't have a green grid till 2050, and that existing buildings are going to be a real complex, difficult, and expensive thing to retrofit.
Now, I saw something today. I might have been just one of these email updates you get from MassSave or whatever, which was, I don't know whether it was out of legislature or ARPA money or whatever, but whatever, there was some kitty of money that was becoming available to basically give you grants.
Yep.
To doing things like heat pumps and stuff like that. So that at least, you know, simultaneous to what our city council may be doing, there are other efforts being expended basically to create incentives to do good creative things, as opposed to just clubbing you over the head and saying you bad, bad boy.
Well, Cambridge is, you know, they have a history of the stick. They're very fond of the stick. Especially when it comes to commercial, which is why, you know, Quentin Zondervan, I hate to keep saying his name. It's like, I feel like if I say it in the mirror three times, he's going to appear behind me and stab me. But, you know, he's been going around telling people now he's willing to potentially exempt residential. Of course he is. He felt a little bit of opposition, and now he's trying to cut deals. So,
I remember a time back in early 1990s when they were talking about growth policy planning for the city, where they convened a very broad cross-section of people who were industrial people, residential people, you know, activists, you name it, right? A lot of representation to sort of come up with sort of a way of looking at growth policy. It wasn't one councilor getting together with a few people who were activists and then tweeting about it. It was a much more broad-based inclusive process that was leading to some consensus, which might not have been as progressive as some people might have wanted, but it had a lot of buy-in.
Well, here's the problem with having an activist council. You know, climate change is probably the single most important challenge of our time. You know, what does that mean? To me, it means to be handled responsibly. And that if we really want to change this course we're on, we're going to have to pass legislation. We're going to have to provide paths to actually get this done. To sit around and battle over how big the stick has to be, to me, isn't someone who's concerned about the environment. It's someone who's trying to create a slush fund to do God knows what with. You know, I look at this in the same way I look at our housing issues, in the same way I look at just about every emergency of our time. You know, if these things are such a big emergency, well, we just had a giant sack of $88 million that was in ARPA funds that, you know, went very little to housing and went very little to climate change initiatives. So how much of an emergency is it really? I think it actually is. I'm not going to say that, you know, we need to start omitting laws and violating people's rights to get it done. But I think if you're serious about actually affecting climate change, then a plan like Ithaca's actually isn't a bad one. a voluntary system where we actually have money that's, you know, given to homeowners and small commercial owners. Because if we start with a carrot, you're going to get a much better result every single time. And the unintended consequences, which is one of my favorite planning board phrases of all time, is like the Bermuda Triangle. Though the list of unintended consequences for passing legislation like this is so long and winding that I could spend probably 24 hours just going through hypotheticals. It's just, it's not worth making people stress about that or sell their condos or move or think about the expense or try or have to send 4,200 letters to strangers. What a waste of energy. Honestly, we can do better.
ARPA is sort of, I always get a little confused about some of the terminology because there were various spending, appropriations bills that were passed at various stages. You know, should it be 8 trillion or 1 trillion or whatever, right?
When we start talking about trillions, it's like money is not, it's talking not
about,
real.
Now we're talking about real money, right? but it occurred to me that, one thing that doesn't really happen all that often is the sort of one-time, potentially non-recurring manna from heaven events, which are really, really excellent opportunities to really address some of the bigger issues, like bigger infrastructure issues, which basically put you into a position where down the road, everything's better for everybody. Right. But what happens with, a lot of the political people, especially on the progressive end of the spectrum, they see it as an opportunity to really put into effect the redistribution of wealth that they've sort of been professing for years, and also just to sort of pass around money because that's going to be politically popular.
Well, that's
and meanwhile, you squander all the one-time opportunity that an event like ARPA and its various related.
ARPA money was magic money for a purpose. And, the purpose was to help those disproportionately affected by the pandemic. You know who was the single most disproportionately affected group by the pandemic? Kids. And there isn't an effing dime in there for them. If I had control of ARPA funds, I would have given every single high school graduate who had to go through the bullshit that they went through for the past 2 years plus, at least $10,000 in scholarship money apiece, or put together a fund so that kids who are having trouble putting finances to go to college can get that money in perpetuity under the end of days, the Cambridge ARPA Magic Money Fund, something to give to those children who wore masks every friggin' day, who sat outside in the cold, who missed their proms, who missed opportunities, who in some cases felt that abandoned by adults who were hiding at home on their Zoom screens. That to me, that's missing from there, just blows my mind. That being said, the housing stuff, some people got a little bit of money, but like the bulk of it, the largest went to people getting $500 a month. Now I understand it isn't like an Andrew Yang thing, like you get he's doing $1,000, but the idea of giving people $500 a month for the next 18 months, the first thing I thought of was like, what happens in month 19?
Well, what happens in month 19 is political chaos because there's no way people are going to be thrilled about the discontinuation of a program like that. But so it becomes a political football to see how you continue it.
But it's just like the housing people who see everything in terms of affordable housing. It must be affordable housing. It must be affordable housing. What happens? It's like, what happens after you house them, these people? Where are their jobs? Where's their upward mobility? Where's their access to the piece of the pie that you and I enjoy? Or are they forever locked in this perpetual cycle of poverty? I know it's probably gonna upset people. It's okay. We can talk to me on the street. But like, I want people to have the same opportunities that I have. I want people to have access. And $500 a day make things easier in the interim. It only sets you up for larger failure and for political conflict. Oh my God, I just realized, Robert, in 18 months, there's an election.
Well, that fact didn't go unnoticed by me. But then again, that's because I'm a political cynic and everybody knows it, But
I think it's important, but it's not the whole answer. You need to be able to give people a world without strings.
Right. I mean, you know, ultimately, we all ought to be in the business of basically lifting people up. And that doesn't just mean, you know, passing around money. It means, you know, as the old parable says, you know, is you can hand around fish. Or this is a kind of a restating of a biblical parable. You know, you can either pass around fish or you can teach people how to fish. You know,
I like to spend my time during the day teaching kids how to get loans, how to get financing. How to build a project, how to start a project, how to you know, get access to the world of capital that's out there in order to make their dreams come true. They leave high school without even the notion of how that even happens.
Or actually today, when I was walking back from Inman Square Hardware, which is really a great place.
It is
no criticism of Central Square Hardware stores, by the way, but it is a great place. And I was noticing just how many buildings had work going on in buildings and how many people were involved in actually working on the systems of buildings. And these are not like poverty jobs. You know, we're talking about, you know, people like electricians and plumbers and roofers or whatever.
Not especially
a lot of these
now.
People actually, they can do really well and there's plenty of work and everybody needs them and whatever, you know. And I just kind of wish as a city and certainly as a school department too, that we could do maybe a little bit better in basically mainstreaming people, not only into those kinds of jobs, but also, you know, the kinds of jobs where they may be working at some of those laboratories or being scientists and whatever. Well, and I just think we don't really do a great job of this.
We don't. And I think it's in large part because we have, you know, 110,000 people living in the city, and the people who are the activist core are like each their own individual ship going off in different directions. And, you know, if you're like, you know, the ABC group or the Cambridge Residents Alliance group or the, you know, Cambridge neighborhood, whatever, blah, 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 the People's United Republic of whatever, you know, typically you're for one issue alone.
I think you're exactly right about that.
And you don't see the interconnectivity of how all those things are actually related. And, you know, I don't want to pick on the ABC kids, but I think they can handle it. They're a little bit tougher. You know, they're focused almost 100% on affordable housing. And I'm like, well, why are we focused on housing that like 90% of people in Cambridge don't have access to? You know, we need to be focused on all of the elements of housing, not just affordable housing. And in terms of like that linkage and inclusionary pieces of that, those two systems are broken. And they're only going to lead you down a path where housing gets so, the cost gets so exacerbated that we've already exceeded $1,000 a square foot in my neighborhood of Riverside, which is lunacy to me because of the supply, but of the people who are coming in who say, oh my God, Cambridge is so nice. We should live here. I can walk. I can go to the brewery. I can go to the restaurant. I can go to that fancy bougie rooftop bar and eat a corn dog. You know, I'll pay $2.4 million for a 1,200 square foot place. That's happening.
I think that in many ways, some of this is happening regardless of what our elected officials do, because people make choices and people still have a right to make individual choices, and they will going to make those choices.
They do, Robert.
Bless them all. But
the way they legislate, though, they're like a child running around with an empty gas can just pouring on the fire. Like everything that they do, every market distortion they've created in the past 30 years has only made housing less affordable.
You know, it was very hard to get a word in edgewise when I was in the part of that Envision process. And I was actually on the housing working group because it was so, the deck was so stacked. But I, you know, the point I was trying to make, I don't know how successful I was, is that basically we have income inequality by design. And all we're doing is actually adding more to it. You know, so, you know, if you want to have a city of nothing but very wealthy and very poor, then just keep on the path you're following. Yeah,
the current program by design does that.
Yes.
Incentive zoning drives only lab development. And the current inclusionary ordinance basically eliminates everything in the middle category and only allows for, you know, I'm not sure there actually have been any 20% projects that weren't PUD developments or attached to a lab. I think there's one in Alewife, but that was the result of, you know, they wrote their own zoning. You know, when you write your own rules, you can make it affordable. But, you know, in terms of everyone else who has to play the regular game, You know, it's why you're not going to see too many of me. And that's like, I used to think like there was more of me, but now that I look around, like there's like maybe like one other guy.
Yeah, no, it is true. When you interact with the sort of people who are part of the builders, there's a lot of like real big players, and there aren't really too many Patrick Barretts out there who are basically doing the kind of projects we like. But who are doing it, you know, in more creative and fundamentally more affordable ways.
The other versions of me left Cambridge and they went to places where they could, you know, build what they want to build. In my love affair for Central Square, that rhymed, in case you wanted to know, is going to keep me here probably forever. The work that I do in the bid, it's what fuels all of my jets. So like, I just want to be able to turn or at least recreate Central Square back into the place of, well, really re-envision the place of, you know, mixed use, residential and entertainment based uses, theaters, art houses, music venues, all the things that make Central Square currently unique, but to elevate all of those things. And currently right now, there's no, like we say we want that, but the book tells me something else.
Right. You know, and, you know, maybe in the, you know, in the next phase of the city where we have a new city manager, by the way, but maybe there'll be some openness to being more creative. I mean, I think we probably need a few more faces on the city council who are more open to being thoughtful and creative rather than, you know, carrying on in the way that we've been doing. But
I don't want to continually beat up on CDD, but I feel like, you know, there, I see them as like the bottleneck for a lot of what happens in the city right now. You have planning processes, you have, you know, C2 and vision, all pretty much stalled, did nothing. You have, you know, these discussions we're having now, and they're being either neutral or they're just being deferential to the council. And or whichever counselor wants them to say whatever they want to say. If you look at their studies, you know, they're kind of a mess. And no one's really pointing that out. And I think, you know, in part that's, you know, it's an uncomfortable conversation to have. But if I was a city councilor right now, I'd be asking the city manager, or if I was the city manager, I'd be taking CDD and I'd be breaking it up into three different departments. You have economic development, community development, and you have housing. And, you know, you allow the good people who are there to do their work.
Actually, let me throw something else in there. If I was to be doing some reorganization, I would also take note of the fact that there was like the environmental and transportation planning division within CDD is yet another division, which in every other city has at least some connection to the traffic people and the public works people.
Yeah.
But because of the history of how it came to be, you know, it all kind of get lumped in there. So I think that when Yan Huang takes over as city manager, that a little bit of thought should go into restructuring the way some of these major departments operate.
I would make them go to like trust fall camp. Every single department has to do it. ISD, CDD, the DPW, all at the same camp at the same time, and they got to spend a week with each other because they don't communicate well interdepartmentally either. They're like little silos, which makes them inefficient. And in a lot of ways, they have a lot of sort of blocked interests that actually they could collaborate on and get a lot more done, but that's not how they operate.
So this does bring it back to two other topics I want to mention in the four or five minutes we still have left here. One is that, you know, we do have Owen O'Riordan is currently the acting city manager. I believe in September 6th is the day that Yan Huang is supposed to take over officially as city manager. They have now scheduled, because they got the minimum 48-hour notice in, that they're having a special city council meeting tomorrow afternoon, July 20th at 4:30 to A, sign the contract with Yan Huang, so which supposedly, I guess that's all been worked out. And then September 6th is when he would actually, actually take over, though he's been working with the existing city staff throughout, so this is good. But there's also a kind of something that took me a little bit by surprise, which is they did appoint a 15-person charter review committee this few weeks ago. And I think at the last time I did program here, I was sort of questioning, I don't even know what the structure is. Does it have a chair? So apparently they are going to, because of the same ad hoc committee that appointed the 15-member commission has now kind of out of nowhere just decided that they want to appoint a chair as well, one of them to make a chair out of the person. And I think it's great. And I know who the person is, and I think it's a good choice. But there is something disturbing to me, though, that the mayor basically sits down with one favorite counselor. They decide what's going to happen. Then they bring in another person or two from this ad hoc committee to say, okay, we are on board with this. They then present it to the council, who then formally give a thumbs up or it's always going to be a thumbs up.
I'm only going to say this about the charter review, Robert, because we don't have a lot of time. And the people in the Cambridge who are clamoring for a drastic change in our charter don't know how good they have it. They have access to the political process currently under our system in a way that they're never going to have with a strong mayor. And while I know that the city manager kind of seems like the Wizard of Oz, he's not that. And I think that if we asked of our councilors to act more like a board of directors, this government would be much more efficient, and it'd make much more sense to people who want to have that kind of. But I think the people who are really pushing for this charter change are the activists who want to upend things.
All right, but now there are some more subtle things that could happen too. I mean, I understand there some city councils were upset at small change things, like the fact that they were advised that they can't have their own lawyer. So maybe they want to change the power structure so they can have their own lawyer, or do other minor things. That I don't know I'm not so convinced they necessarily
want to. What the hell is the point of that? You're going to have whoever the city solicitor is and the private attorney of Councillor X going at it, offering an alternative opinion.
I think it would be a foolish thing to do. But the thing is that I don't yet see any indication that they want to radically get rid of the form of government.
That's the request of a councillor who doesn't know what a councillor is supposed to be doing.
Right. So anyway, I'm going to try and be optimistic as we go into this process. But we're almost out of time here, but that's a topic I could go on with forever. So, Patrick, thank you very much.
Can I just do one thing real quick?
Very fast.
Quick. Jedediah, Gemma, go to bed.
Right. See ya. Bye-bye.